Hey there, Discerning Thoughtbot podcast listener. I just wanted to take a quick moment to ask for your feedback. There's so many cool things that we'd love to do with all the shows, and want to know how you feel about our sponsor reads and the possibility of starting a Patreon-style campaign to make them all possible. If you could head over to tbot.io/survey for a super short questionnaire, your input would be much appreciated. That link again is tbot.io/survey. And hey, thanks.
Hello.
Hello. Tom seems to think you're loud. Try again.
Hold on. Let me turn the gain down. Hello. Am I still loud?
You're good. Might have been on our end. Who knows? Might have just been Tom's headphones. Mm-hmm. Tom says it's just his headphones. That's why I'm not the sound guy. Can you adjust your mic? How about you turn your headphones down from 10?
Turn yours up to 10.
Whoa. I can hear my own voice. That's very... I'm sorry, everybody who has to listen to my voice every week.
It is quite horrifying. I'm glad this is out in the open.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Derek.
We have to talk about yarn.
Okay. What is yarn?
Yarn is a new NPM client. People are keep saying it's replacing NPM. It's not replacing NPM, the registry and the server part. It's just a client that basically is Bundler and some other stuff, as far as I understand it.
It does have its own proxy in front of the server, though,
yes,
right?
Yes, very interesting, right? But basically gives you gemfile.lock for JavaScript.
So this is Facebook's answer to your continuous rant about how shrink wrap doesn't work and isn't the default.
Right. And their blog post that announced it, which we'll link to in the show notes. I haven't played with it yet, so I don't want to go too deep on it. But the blog post that announced it was basically my exact journey and probably everybody's exact journey who's more familiar with something like Bundler, which gives you like deterministic deploys so long as Ruby Gems is up and running. And it was like, first we decided we were going to check in node modules, and then that got to be a pain in the butt because the diffs were huge. And I was like, yep, I remember that part. And they're like, then we tried going to shrink wrap. And I was like, oh, yes, I remember this too. But shrink wrap is not like automatically maintained. Yep, I remember this. I opened up issues about this. So it's cool to see somebody take a swing at it. And talking to my coworker here, Chris Toomey, he says that several other people have tried to take similar swings at it. But for whatever reason, Yarn has the right backing. I mean, it has Facebook, so you know React is going there. And they lined up support on day one from, I don't know if you really have to support it, but they got like Angular and Ember and, I don't know, all those libraries also behind them. I don't think is there really anything to support? It just uses package.json like NPM.
Yeah,
does.
I mean, I think it's more just the people who develop it are using it.
Right, and encouraging folks to use Yarn for those reasons. So we'll link to it in the show notes. I haven't had a chance to play with it, so I don't want to talk too much about it, but I was excited to see that and happy for, I don't do a lot of JavaScript development, but happy for the people who do, because I think it's going to make their lives better. It's interesting, the proxy thing. So they do, by default, there's a proxy between Yarn and the NPM server, which I'm sure there are actual technical reasons for that, but the pessimist, I guess, or maybe the realist, depending on how you look at it, in me, wonders how long that's going to be just a proxy.
Yeah, that was my thought too. Just because it's like, why have the proxy at all if you don't have plans that involve it pointing at your own repository?
Right, because, you know, Facebook is trying to make this stuff fat. Like, they're really proud of how much faster it is. And once they get this client stuff, why not turn to the server and be like, oh, we can make this whole thing more performant by controlling the server as well, responding in these ways. And, you know, if I were NPM the company, I don't know how excited I'd be about this.
Right.
Excited because my users get what I think is objectively a better experience. I don't know. Maybe there's people out there who disagree with us. If you disagree with us and you're not excited about Yarn, then comment on the website or send us an email at host@bikeshed.fm or something, because I'd love to see some arguments against it. Other than, like, it's just another new thing in the JavaScript ecosystem people have to deal with. But, like...
Is NPM Inc., NPM the client is also separate from NPM Inc., right? And NPM Inc. is only the server/repository? Is that correct?
Sure. NPM is a lot of things. NPM is the package manager for Node.js. NPM registry is a public collection of packages. NPM is the command line client, and NPM Inc. is the company that hosts and maintains all of the above.
Okay, so they do maintain the client.
Yes. And I don't know, there's a whole, but we can link to about NPM, which says has some stuff about NPM Inc. and things like that. I don't know how it's run and what it ultimately matters if they don't control the client anymore. But if they didn't control the server anymore, then there would be a real question.
Right, that'd be, that'd be some fragmentation.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm excited about it. Excited to try it next time I'm on a JavaScript project. I know, like I said, I was talking to Chris today, and he's on an Ember project right now, and he's already, he's busy trying to upgrade to newer versions of Node, which should be pretty simple, and then he wants to turn his attention to cutting them over to Yarn. So that'll be cool.
One thing I noticed, I'm just poking around on GitHub, and both Yarn and NPM have failing builds. All the other package managers, they link in their readmes, all are passing.
Yarn was announced yesterday afternoon and has over 10,000 stars already on GitHub. That's pretty impressive.
That's not bad.
Tells you something.
I would say that is a trending repository.
Yeah. Yeah, so for whatever reason, they got it right, I guess. Yeah, that's all I want to say about Yarn right now until I actually use it. But I would love to hear if people are using it and find it to be in some way worse than the NPM client.
Yeah.
Because I'm not super into that world, and I'd love to hear some people who are, their opinions. The other thing I'm working on, which is new for me in my like director position at ThoughtBot, is we're looking to hire somebody in our Boston office, a developer. And so we've, you know, posted the listing and we're starting to get applicants come in. And I'm like, for the first time in a position where I'm like the first line of like looking at these people and being like, do we want to move you forward or do we not want to move you forward? And deciding that. And then also like, we're trying to take a more, I guess, recruitery approach. Like if we know people that are working at other companies that we would like to work with, like just reaching out to them being like, hey, we have this job. I'm actually one of the people hiring it. I'm not a recruiter. Just want to talk to you. Like, do you want to come in and talk to us about this job? So that's kind of what my time has been. I mean, not all of it. That's what I spent my investment time on. That's what I've been doing. Like when I wake up in the morning, I check and see what kind of responses we get. And it's really interesting because, like, this is my first time. I've interviewed people before and I've looked over resumes before, but I've, like I said, I've never been, like, chiefly responsible for that. So it's, like, bringing up all sorts of questions for me. Like, one of the things we do at ThoughtBot is we ask for a code sample, like, either something on GitHub or maybe you can zip something up and send it over to us. Like, I think what I ended up doing was zipping up some code that I wrote for my previous employer and, like, totally removing any sort of, like, proprietary information, because I was like, what kind of message does it send if I just send you like a whole bunch of proprietary information to review? So I like made the point that I've scrubbed it, and it, I think I got it to the point where it would run, but I was like, this may have some bugs in it due to what I removed, and they were like, doesn't matter, what we're really looking for is like the shape of things and whether what it shows you understand, stuff like that.
Right.
So it's been interesting as I like go through applications, I'm like, yes, this person sounds like somebody that would be interesting to work with. Let's start looking at the code. And now I'm the one who has to decide, like, based on this code sample, whether or not this person is somebody who should come in for like a non-technical interview or technical interview or whatever the next step ends up being. And I find myself like really trying to fight like my own biases on style, right? Because style is so easily changed. Like when I came to ThoughtBot, I did not write code like somebody at ThoughtBot writes code. I wrote code like I write code, and ThoughtBot has a particular style and we're pretty consistent with that. And I did it slightly different, slightly differently. One of those.
Slightly differently.
So I don't know. Like now I'm like, well, what should I be looking at? Because that's the first thing that steps out to me. Like I'm looking at a code sample and, you know, you sent me a link to GitHub and I pull up one file on GitHub and it has inconsistent indentation. To me, that drives me absolutely nuts. But it's also something where I could probably, if you were great otherwise, I could just talk to you and be like, here's how you do consistent indentation and make sure you do that.
See, I think there's a difference between judging somebody on the style that they're using and judging somebody based on whether they are consistently using a style.
Hmm. It's fair. And I like that you're making it okay for me to say if you can't indent consistently.
No, because it just shows if you literally can't even just indent a file, doesn't even matter if it's whatever we would call quote-unquote correct, right? Because different people have different rules on how to indent things. But if you can't just consistently apply something as simple as indentation to your files, it shows sloppiness and a lack of caring about the person reading your code to me.
Right. Or possibly, like, what I was thinking is, like, what happened is they used two different editors that were configured in different ways.
Sure.
But, or maybe, this wasn't the case in the sample I'm thinking of, but you know, maybe the case is you used one editor that had that inserted tabs and another editor that inserted spaces, and those were
no. If there's tabs anywhere, just flat deny.
Unless it's Go,
right. So, not in Ruby.
But like, so what I was thinking was that. But then, like, even that is pretty bad because if you send me a GitHub thing, like, go look at the way I'm going to look at your code, right? So I'm going to look at it in GitHub, go look at it and make sure it looks right in GitHub. And GitHub has like 8 space tabs, so it's never going to look right. So, but yeah, that's like, I'm trying to decide, like, what do I look at here to decide whether I think this person, like, we say that we're going to review it for like tests. Does your code have tests? And so that's like something I look at. Doesn't have tests. What kind of tests are they? We also say, like, we're going to review it for whether or not you understand, like, object-oriented programming concepts.
Right.
So, like, what kind of things would you look at if you were in this position? Help me out.
So, first thing I go for is the God object.
Yep.
How big is it? How ugly is it? How much should they give into, like, metaprogram all of the things? Mm-hmm. And especially the tests around that object. Tests in general, I think I look at more often than the actual code, just because I find test writing practices more, I guess, maybe not more important, but at least as important. So I try to make sure I guess the default is to spend less time looking at tests. So I try to overcompensate. Anyway, other things I look for, I guess, would be like, do you have any classes in your models directory that don't inherit from Active Record Base?
Right. And you immediately disqualify those controllers.
No, again, it depends on the size of the application, really.
Right. Do you have service objects, your favorite term in the world?
Right. Do they have objects?
Yes, that don't inherit from anything. Well, right. Don't explicitly inherit from anything.
Don't inherit from a framework thing.
Right. Yeah, and that's sort of where I've been at, too. The other tricky part is, like, we use that code sample when you get to, like, your technical interview as well, because that's typically what we'll go over together, like, we'll be like, let's look at your code. Tell me things you like. Tell me things you don't like. Here's something I noticed. What do you think about that? Like, do like a in-person code review kind of thing.
Right.
But we're also using it to judge whether or not, like, we want to move you forward at all. And I forget where I was going with that. Oh, so where I was going with that is I have to make this decision. This first pass through it is like, I want to make this decision fairly quickly. Like, I don't want to have to download and run your app to figure out, like, where the complexities are and whether or not you've added sufficient test coverage.
Right. Well, we're talking, what, 15 minutes tops, right?
Yes, 15 minutes is about what I would spend on each person that I'm putting into, like, let's review their code pile.
Yeah. So the 10,000 line applications can make that really hard.
Right. They can, but...
Or the 100,000
But they're also more interesting because it gives them more opportunity. Like, so this is where the conflict comes in, because, like, the bigger applications mean I would expect you to have found, for the type of person we're looking for, to have found an opportunity to do something interesting, like extract a service object somewhere.
Hopefully they mention where that thing is.
Right, that's another really useful thing. If you're going to apply for this job, like, tell me something cool. Don't just, like, send me an application, that's cool. And maybe we should be more clear about this with the question, but tell me what I should be looking at. Like, tell me what you're proud of in that application, and I will definitely spend time looking there. And the other thing is, like, I will also go and look for things you're probably not proud of. Like,
right.
Sort the files by line count and see which one's the biggest and be like, okay, let's go look at that. If you send me something with Git history, like, look at the churn. What's the file? I mean, maybe I probably wouldn't get into churn until, like, we were actually digging into the actual technical interview part where we're doing a code review together. But yeah.
I always find it interesting to ask about the code that they're least proud of, and then see if, like, based on things like just line count or Git churn, if you can find things that, like, very clearly they're sending you the thing that they're actually pretty okay with to avoid showing code that they're not actually proud of.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to get into asking for too much code, because I do think it's really hard for a lot of people to supply a project for you to look over.
Right, well, because you have to have built a Rails application in some context so that you can show it or spend the time to scrub it.
Right, and it should be mostly your work, right?
Right.
So, like, I was in a situation in my last company where I was the only person working on a Rails application. So I scrubbed it of what I thought was proprietary information and submitted that. But if I had been working with 3 or 4 other people, it would be hard.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's also totally okay to send, like, a file or a couple of files. Particularly at that first pass level. Whereas at the second pass, when we're going to do like a technical code review about something, that doesn't necessarily, like, it's best if it's your code, but it doesn't even necessarily have to be your code. It could just be like, I found this code on the internet. let's read through it and review it together. And like, let's see what you think of it. And I'll ask you questions about it. And I'll see what you like and what you don't like. And we'll talk about it as if we're reviewing a third person's code, which is also kind of a pretty telling thing. So I don't know. I'm just trying to work through all of the permutations, I guess, all of the ways that I'm going to get this wrong. Definitely okay. trying to avoid my first like instinct of like, that's not the style I would write it in. But I think your point of like, can you write in a consistent style in some manner, I think is probably pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I think, especially if you're applying to a place like Thoughtbot, you should have an opinion on a style.
Right. Yeah.
Which one it is doesn't matter so much, but you should at least be able to stick to something consistently.
Right. Yeah. And then, like I said, the other part of like, reaching out to people that I think might be interesting to work with and trying to recruit them is interesting because like nobody for whatever reason, there's no group of people that hates being offered a job that pays a lot of money more than software developers. Like,
so have you gotten anybody who like,
no, I have not.
Because there's a difference between what you're doing and sending recruiters, Sam.
I know, but like if you sit in our office and you listen to people complain about recruiters or any developer, any office with a lot of developers, you will hear people complain about recruiters, which is like, I get it. It's annoying. They clearly don't, like a lot of times they clearly don't pay any attention or don't have any idea what they're talking about. But ultimately their crime was they tried to offer you what is likely a very high paying position somewhere.
Like, well, or they tried to get you to go do an interview that you could have gone and done on your own, that they will get some commission if you get hired, but they're not like, you know, the agencies I'm talking about where they're not hired by companies,
right?
Like they
yeah.
just go find sure. you and like, I represent this candidate and actually put you in a worse position by representing you.
Right. And oftentimes like back in the day where people printed out resumes, I would get stacks of those resumes from like my manager being like, here's some people I want you to go through and tell me what you think about them. And like there would be these weird like frames that the recruiters would put around their resume that made it look even worse. And it was like, what are you doing? Like, so when I did work with a recruiter like that who happened to like reach out to me when I came to Thoughtbot, like at the time when I decided like, you know, I'm going to start looking for different jobs. Like I got a phone call, like we all get a lot of phone calls. Although I think that's lessening now because people just stopped answering their phone now that there's all those robocalls constantly.
Right.
But I would get phone calls from recruiters constantly and I would just ignore them or just say not interested. And like I was having a particularly bad day and this one recruiter called and he was like, do you want to hear about some listings I've got? And I was like, boy, do I. Just shoot them. What do you got? And I remember sitting in the conference room at my last job just listening to this guy pitch me on jobs. And I was like, listen, you got me on a good day. Like I usually don't take calls from recruiters, but a couple of those sounded interesting to me. Like, go ahead, set up some interviews for me. Cause like, I was just thinking about maybe starting to look around and you've already found some stuff for it. Like, so he provided some sort of value.
Did you take a job?
Nice. I went to like two interviews and I think I got two offers.
Did they turn out to be crap jobs?
I mean, they were good jobs. But I took the Thoughtbot job. And the recruiter was actually pretty helpful in like talking me through the options and like very clearly wanted me to accept one of the offers that came from an interview he sent me on.
Sure.
Which was not the Thoughtbot thing. Thoughtbot does not work with professional recruiters at the moment, which is why, you know, we're trying to get involved and do it ourselves. So we don't have to do that. And so, but he was still very helpful in like the feedback he provided. So he calls me every year. I can basically set my clock to it. And asks me how things are going and if I'm considering making a move and asks me like what I'm seeing and like as far as like industry trends and stuff like that. So he's actually one of the good recruiters, I would say.
He's making an attempt.
Right. Yeah. And he knows what he's talking about. Like he doesn't call me up and offer me like Java jobs.
Right.
Because he knows that like, but he'll talk to me and be like, well, what about Python? Like that's kind of adjacent. Right. And like that kind of thing. And like last time we talked, he was like, what do you see happening with Node? And, you know. Like, just trying to get my opinion on things, which I think was interesting. And then also, like, now that I've moved into doing the director thing, like, can I send you people? I'm like, sorry, no, you can't. Well, you can, but we're not going to pay you any money.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and a lot of times, like, you know, I was in it was a kind of a lower tier, I guess, of job. But, like, I would get resumes from recruiters every now and then, and they'd be, like, actual good candidates that I would hire, but I just didn't have the budget to pay the $15,000 recruiter fee.
Right. Yeah. I'd be like, I can hire you. I mean, that's always negotiable. Depending,
yeah.
Possibly.
It wasn't worth it.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I guess that's a long way of me saying, yes, recruiters are annoying, but like, let's, as a group of people in a career, let's simmer down about like the hate because if I try to explain this to like my stepfather who's a truck driver, like he just rolls over and like just like cannot believe it. Just like starts from like rolling his eyes and like, oh, sorry, somebody emailed you to try and give you a job. Anyway,
I don't know. It's also just like when you know that you're just like one of 2,000 people they randomly cold called that day because they looked for anybody on GitHub who's ever committed to a repo with Ruby as the language.
Right.
And I had one the other day. Have I told you the job title story?
No.
So my job title is 10X Hacker Ninja Guru.
You got to pick it yourself?
Well, no. So I thought it'd be funny to see what happened if I put that on some paperwork. Mm-hmm. And turns out what happens is they give you a work permit for 10X Hacker Ninja Guru. So I can't actually legally work in Canada as any other job. So
you really got yourself, you know, there.
Yeah. So I got some spam from a recruiter the other day, which, like, you know, they've started skipping LinkedIn and finding my email address directly. And I keep my email address public on GitHub because people do actually tend to want to legitimately contact me for programmer things. I guess that's the other thing that really irks me is when they're going on GitHub to find my contact info. It's like, no, that's our place. It's not for you. LinkedIn is for you.
It's the place
where we go to do work.
Right. It's a place where developers can get your email addresses and also a stunning number of people who claim to be doing research on open source projects.
Yes. But you remember that issue on one of the Thoughtbot iOS repos where a recruiter randomly came and commented on the pull request?
Yes, and it was completely unrelated. It was about like looking for developers who can for the LAMP stack.
Right. And so everybody started replying with pictures of lamps.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
Anyways, I got this email from this recruiter who's just like, it looks like you've done some Ruby. That's cool, but it's all Greek to me. I don't know programming. What I do know is that my client needs an absolutely rock star Ruby on Rails developer. And I just replied with, sorry, I'm not a rock star. I'm a 10X Hacker Ninja Guru.
Yeah. I like that's your title. That's good.
It's a good title.
Yeah. So that's my interview story.
Have you had any successful recruitings?
I will say only at this point that we have a couple of people coming in to talk to us.
That's good.
Of people that we're actually reaching out to. It's kind of astounding. Like the job ended up getting posted to like LinkedIn's job board and like Indeed and things like that. And it's kind of astounding the like low quality of most of the stuff that comes in. Like I've been in a position where I applied for a lot of jobs at one time, but I always tried to take at least 10 minutes to be like, what's this place about? How do I tailor what I have to them? And like 10 minutes, all it takes, right? And like, okay, I'm going to eliminate this paragraph. And like, after you've done it a few times, you can reuse those snippets for various situations. But like, just get like form letter stuff as a cover letter or today.
I was going to ask, do people still do cover letters?
Yes, people do cover letters. And I find them much more interesting than like your actual resume. I mean, the actual resume I'll glance at, but I actually like to hear, like, what do you write about? Basically, tell me who you are, why you want to work here, and why I would want to work with you.
Right.
That's what I get out of a cover letter, so I'm hoping. And we actually ask, like, one of the questions we ask two questions. We ask for, like, a URL to a portfolio or GitHub or something like that. And then we ask, like, what's it going to be like to work with you? And if you can't take the two questions we ask you seriously, then, like, it's just not going to happen. Like, there was one person who I reviewed this morning who basically used a ton of profanity and was like trying to make a joke in the URL in the show us some code field. And it was like, I see what you did here. I'm laughing. And maybe your goal was to be like so outrageous that you got me laughing, but you're not going to get the job.
Right.
And like,
that's the person you want in front of your clients, right?
Right. And otherwise, this person's application was reasonable. Like, I looked through it and I was like, this doesn't feel like somebody. Like, that's the other thing is like, I'm looking through it and I'm like, this doesn't feel to me like somebody I want to work with. Like, I'm not like, oh my gosh, there's a couple that have come in and I'm like, I have to talk to this person because they sound like somebody I might want to work with. But I'm also trying to guard against like, this person doesn't sound like somebody that I immediately say, like, oh my gosh, I want to work with that person. But what the way I feel about that may not be the same as like some of my coworkers feel about that. And so like trying to give people like, okay, my first reaction is like this person's borderline, but like, let's go ahead and look at the code and see what, what that proves out. And then in the code thing was basically a joke. So I got to be like, okay, well, cool.
Makes your decision easy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's sort of similar to like in open source when a pull request comes in and it's like, I don't really want this code, but I don't hate it enough to close the pull request. It's like somebody's got to just make the call.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to do is just like give everybody anywhere from 30 seconds to be like, this is clearly you didn't read the thing, to like 15 minutes and I'm going to start reviewing your code and move you along that way. And then we have like, so the process here is like we do, you know, we get your application, we glance at your code to see like, is this reasonable? And then we do a non-technical interview with somebody, usually Chad, where he just kind of talks about your experience, what it's like to work at ThoughtBot, get a sense for like where you are in your career, that kind of stuff. And then presuming you move on from that, we do a technical interview, which is where I think there's some interesting things about the way we do technical interviews here. I think we do them pretty well if you're going to do a technical interview, like a code-based interview. Like we don't do quizzes, like we don't make you write FizzBuzz or things like that. And we don't make you whiteboard things unless, you know, during the conversation you decide like you want to get up. And like if you're the type of person who wants to whiteboard things, get up and whiteboard things. But we ask you about things that you should have encountered. Like if you're applying as a Rails developer, and now we get a little more polyglot, so we kind of have to like change the interview a little bit depending on who's applying. But like if you're applying as a Rails developer, we're going to ask you about things like you should know what a polymorphic association is at some point, right? And yeah, you should be able to talk to me about like why you used it. Like I'm not afraid to say that we're going to ask you about polymorphic associations, because unless you're actually familiar with how they work and where they go wrong and when the right time to use them is, like you can read all the documentation you want on it, but unless you've used it, you're probably not going to be able to talk too intelligently about them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was going to say that's one of the flaws, I think, in ThoughtBot's technical interview, is that you can kind of study for it if you know the questions, because most of them don't have a right answer, but all of them do have a very specific wrong answer.
I suppose. But like even if you do, right? So if you get the question right, like it's never just when I'm doing the technical interview, it's never just like I'm going to ask you this technical question. Like I'm also looking for your answer and then looking for ways to expand the conversation, right?
Right.
So like if you give me an answer that's like you say, several of them have many different answers, I will then start, you give one answer and I'll start like going down that path a little bit and be like, okay, well, tell me why. I don't know. I'm having trouble thinking about a thing, but like basically trying to make sure it's not just like I read this documentation right before I came here, which I've been the person being interviewed and been like, oh, I just basically every Ruby interview I went into, I read up on the methods in enumerable, because I was like, if I know all of these, any quiz question that somebody's likely to ask, I'm going to come across like, here are all the methods in enumerable. Oh, I know I need to call flatten. And
right.
I know that flatten takes an argument of like how deep to flatten, and boom, there you go, like that. And I read about that 15 minutes before I came in here, but that's like the whiteboard quizzy type interview, which is
that's kind of fair.
But and then the other thing is, even if you do well enough, right, the third step is you're going to come in and pair on something,
right?
And that's hard to fake,
right?
Because I mean, it's also understandably people are nervous. But like when I pair with somebody, I spend a decent amount of time trying to make sure like I'm going slow and not assuming that like they know my workflow kind of thing, or trying to let them drive a lot. And it can take a while to get the nerves out, but after a while, most people kind of like settle in, and it can become pretty clear, right? That like you don't know what the next step is, or you don't know what the problem is, that kind of stuff.
I always hated being the person that people had to pair with when they came in for interviewing in the Denver office.
Why?
Because I was always working on crazy projects that like weren't representative of their job. And so they like, hey, you've never done 3D rendering engines before? Cool. Come work on a 3D rendering engine with me.
Yeah.
Although I had one person who came in that it was on a day where just it turned out a humongous bottleneck was on this function where we had a list of keyframes and we had to find the first keyframe that was after a given time. And then IE implementation was like our main bottleneck. And the array was sorted, but because the comparison needed to know both the current, to know that it's the first one after, you need to look at both the current and the next frame. So it like the solution ended up just being writing a hand rolled binary search, just like, hey, you know those interview questions that people ask that you're like, oh, I'll never need this in my job. Hey, guess what we get to do.
But see, that's a situation where like I wouldn't be like, let's write a binary search. I might say, let's write a binary search, but then I'd be like, it's totally cool if you don't know what a binary search is. Like, Yeah. Like, I'll explain it to you. And if I explain it to you, it's pretty simple. So hopefully you'll start to give us direction on how we should proceed.
I mean, like, of course, kind of you're thing. Allowed to go Google things, right?
Even in the technical interview, like when people say they don't know, like, oh, you know, I'm not really sure if it's this or that or whatever, I will ask, like, how would you find out? Like,
right.
I haven't done this, but I talked to other people at ThoughtBot who have done it. I think Ben maybe was saying this. Somebody was saying that, like, there's a computer in the room where we do the interview most of the time, and they'll just be like, here's a keyboard, figure it out. Like, go tell me what the answer is. Like, go look up whatever you want to look up. Like, you're going to have a computer at your side. And that's instructive, too, to see, like, what resources people turn to.
Well, because that's the Google job at the end of the day, right?
Right. How do you find the answer that you need? Yeah, and I think that the working on complex problems thing is a lot of what, when we're looking for volunteers to pair with people who come in for the pairing interview, a lot of people say, like, oh, I'm working on something that kind of requires a lot of context. And I do that. I do the same thing. Like, oh, I'm working on something that's not really great for pairing. But, like, that's kind of a lot of the job. Especially as a consultant, is being like plopped into a situation where you have limited context and you need to like show something for it at the end of the day.
Right.
And it's how quickly can you come up and how quickly can you contribute by asking questions. Like when I did my pairing interview, I ended up in the morning, I paired with Josh Clayton and we sat down and I was like, please don't say we're going to work on Factory Girl. Please don't say we're going to work on Factory Girl. Cause like, it just seemed like I'd never looked at the internals of it. And it just seemed like something that was probably going to be a mess. Like, not a mess, but, like, something that was probably going to require quite a bit of, like, architectural understanding to grasp. And he was like, we're going to work on a bug in Factory Girl. And I was like, oh, great. Good God. And so we worked on, like, there were some methods at the time that you couldn't call on factories due to the way something, something, instance eval, something, something.
okay.
I don't remember. I can find the pull request and link to it in the show notes that we worked on together. But I just remember, like, just hanging on for dear life as he was like tearing through this code base. And he's, you know, good about answering my questions and stuff. But I pretty quickly, like, we started out and I like wrote the test case, which was, he was like, here's the problem. Like, in this situation, you can't call a method like this. Let's write a test. And I was like, okay, cool. I can do that. And then he kind of took over, like, I think it's in this area where we would need to fix this error, fix this bug. And so we dove into it together there. But like, pretty quickly, I was in over my head. And I just kept asking myself, like, what is it I can do? Because I can't write code here because I don't know. Like, he's saying things and I'm only understanding 50% of it. And like, so I'm asking questions, but not to get to like 100% understanding, because I don't think I'm going to get there. Like, just being like, can I get to 70% understanding? And can I ask questions that like I think might help his thinking along? Or like, he would ask a question, I would give like what I would assume was a naive answer, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, oh. And then it would like spark another thought from him. So like, even though I think after the first hour, my fingers barely touched the keyboard, like I still felt pretty good about the pairing interview once lunch came around. I had a huge headache because I was like just trying to like see through what was happening and keep everything in my head as he's moving through his code base he's worked on for years.
Right.
But I still felt like we did actually solve the issue, and I still felt like at the end I had an understanding of what we did and could like, I could have written the commit message, right?
But
all during it, it was like I was assembling everything from first principles and just trying to ask valuable questions along the way. And I've never really talked to Josh about like what his impressions were, but obviously I did well enough. And like, if that was his impression too, was that like, I didn't write much code, but I asked good questions, which I kind of assume is what happened there. I'll have to ask him someday. Been here for 4 years, maybe I could ask him that. He'll be like, oh no, I recommended we didn't hire you. I don't know how you got here.
did you ever apply to Pivotal Labs?
No.
I really enjoyed their technical interview because they've written a lot about it. They do the same technical interview for everybody. You pair with a person and implement a set in Java. Performance doesn't matter. It's just the API. It's test driven. And because you're pairing, if you don't know Java, the other person can drive 100% of the time and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, see how far you can get on that in an hour.
Okay.
And so
it's not a problem that everybody in the world knows what the problem is.
Well, it's an easy problem to solve, right? Like, because you just implement it in terms of array since performance doesn't matter. And so it's a very easy problem to solve. It's more about the thought process that you go through, the development process. It's the little microcosm of what because they have the same third step where you go in and pair for a full day. It's just like a little microcosm of that. But
and they do pairing 100% of the time, basically, right?
Right.
So like, they're judging your ability to pair.
Well, it's
or your maybe not your ability, but your I don't know. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, do you have the underlying skills? Like, are you a good communicator? Like, that kind of thing.
Right.
Like, maybe you're not used to pairing, but you ask good questions, that kind of thing.
And the thing I liked about it is that there are a specific set of things that you can look for, because it's just the sort of problem where it's a pretty easy problem to solve. So it gives you a lot of room to just see people's problem solving process and worry less about whether they're going to be able to solve the problem. Then there's also just very distinct benchmarks that you can look for.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they have a specific grading system that they use for it, because they give it to everybody, so they have a good idea of where people land on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was a well-designed technical interview.
Right. It's also why I like the Thoughtbot technical interview. It's different, but it's consistent.
Yes.
And so I get an idea of a benchmark over time, having given it a number of times. I mean, it's not like I've given it a ton of times. I've given it, I don't know, 15, 20 times maybe. And that includes, like, sometimes when we have engagements with clients who are trying to hire, they'll ask us to help us hire. So I will give the same interview there.
Right.
And like I said, sometimes maybe people know the questions because it changes very infrequently, but they don't know where we're going to take the questions after we start asking them. It's interesting. The other thing that came to mind, we were talking about the pairing interview. Caleb Thompson, one of my coworkers here, had a thing where he was basically like, if in the span of like the 3 hours I work with you, because we typically will do a full day pairing, but it's like, you'll pair with somebody in the morning, you'll eat lunch with the whole team, you'll pair with somebody in the afternoon. So like 3 hours with each person or so. And so if in the span of 3 hours you haven't taught him anything, then he's like thumbs down on you. Which at first I was like, that's pretty harsh. And he was like, I don't mean you've taught me something about code. It can be anything. Like literally anything. I spent 3 hours with you. Did I learn anything interesting? Like it could be
right.
An editor trick. It could be something Ruby you didn't know Ruby did, or something you didn't know Rails did. Or it could just be something about anything. Like this person's really into rock climbing and they taught me X, right? At least like
there's somebody you want to work with.
Right. And they can teach, and that it reminded me of a question that I got asked when I was interviewing at EMC for an internship when I was in college. And it was like the person was like, what do you like to do outside of work? And I was like, oh, I umpired baseball for a long time. I'm still doing that occasionally. And like, I do these other things. And he's like, oh, baseball. Okay, cool. I know. I'm a pretty big baseball fan. He's like, and you said you umpired? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, could you teach me like an obscure baseball rule? And I was like what? And he's like, how about the infield fly rule? And I was like, okay. And so like, I taught him the infield fly rule.
Which apparently, if he knew what it was called, he was just testing
right,
whether
right.
you actually
like,
did that.
Right, but I think it was just like he wanted to find something that I was interested in and just see how I mean, maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't actually know baseball and he was just BSing me and he just wanted to see how I would teach something.
Sure.
But I thought that was interesting. And for a couple of years, I used the same, like, back before I worked at Thoughtbot, when interviews were like, hey, Derek, go talk to this person for half an hour and tell us what you think. And there was no guidance on like what I should be talking to them about or anything like that. I would just go in there and be like, so tell me about your work at Paper Corp. What did you do there? And that, like, basically, I felt like I was asking the same exact questions that everybody else before me had asked and the people after me would ask. And I was like, I feel bad for this person who's going to be here. Like, we had some pretty insane, like, 6 hours. People would come in for 6 hours and do interview rounds with people, like one-on-one interviews for people who are probably asking the same question over and over again.
Yeah.
So I always felt pretty bad about that. But I was pretty proud about the, like, I'd be like, teach me something. Like, what have you been working on? Like, I remember one person telling me, like, they just bought a house and they were, like, working on slowly renovating each room. And I was like, teach me something that you learned in the process of the renovations. And I remember they taught me about how to remove and put on new wallpaper, which was exciting. but, like, those types of things, which you wouldn't even think are necessarily, like, so that... Yeah, where did I come from this? Oh, the, like, teach me something, Caleb's bar of teach me something. I don't think I have the same explicit bar, but it's certainly something I'm looking for. Like, did I learn anything new working with you for half a day?
My bar was just always, would I be excited to pair with that person again?
Yeah, that's a pretty easy one. Or, like, could we continue working on, like, that hard problem you were working on? Was like, am I sad that they're no longer working on this with me? Then definitely they should be here.
Right.
Like, am I like, no, can you keep pairing with me for the rest of the day?
Shopify's process is pretty intense because it's sort of close to what you were just mentioning, where if you make it, so I don't remember if we do a remote technical interview or not, but if you make it to the last step is we fly you out and it's 2 full days, not like pairing, but just a back-to-back interviews of different, of a variety of types. So, like, the first one will always just be with recruiting/HR, And then I'm assuming some of them are like to test your Rails knowledge. And I think part of the reason we do so many is because part of it is also if you all do like to have a bunch of different teams interview you. So that right. way, if you do get accepted, like we figure out what team to put you on during that process as well. But just everybody I know who's gone through it says it is really intense.
Right. I had a similar interview process with, I did an internship at Microsoft. And that was a similar, like, you're going to do an all-day interview thing. Like, they fly you out, you're going to do an all-day interview thing, meet with the recruiter, first of all, and then, like, meet with different people from several different teams. Like, because maybe you're not a fit for this one team, or maybe you're fit, or maybe you're a fit for all three, and, like, you get a feel for all three, and you can pick, or that kind of thing. And that was when, I don't know if they're still doing this, but that was in the days of the brain teaser interview at Microsoft, where they would ask you, you know, brain teasers, presumably to see how you thought about things, like open-ended ones, like why are manhole covers round, which I mean the answer is because manholes are round, but but then like also like riddle type things that have like if you have you have like eight things and one of them weighs a tiny bit more than the other and you need to figure out the one that weighs a tiny bit more is poisonous and you need to figure out which one is poisonous but you can only make two measurements or something like that. I'm getting it wrong, but as pretty much the exact some version of that was pretty much the exact one I got in my interview with one of the teams. And I had, of course, done homework beforehand to like read up on as many of these riddles as I possibly could. And so I knew the answer. Like when he asked me the question, I knew the answer. And I was like, okay, I know this answer, but it's going to look real bad if I just spit out the right answer. So like I very cleverly went down the obvious road for 10 minutes and was like drawing things out on a whiteboard where I was like, oh, okay, so you draw, divide them like this and do this, blah, 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 blah. So I went down that road for like 5 or 10 minutes. And then like I very dramatically stopped and was like, oh, wait a minute. Can I start over again? And he was like, oh, yeah, it's your interview. Do whatever you want. And then like start drawing out the right answer and like pausing for effect and being like, yeah, okay. Okay, yep. This was, yeah, that's how you do it. Boom. It was one of my greater acting jobs, I felt.
I was like, going to say, if this software thing doesn't work out, it sounds like you got a good backup.
I was pretty proud. Like, I left that place and I was like, I think I sold them that I hadn't read about that on the internet like a day before I came here. And I did get the job. So,
like, so a lot of people I speak to after they do an interview, they're like, oh man, I totally bombed that. But like I felt like I've bombed every interview I've ever done. Is the same been true for you?
No, I usually feel pretty good about them. I usually feel pretty. There's only one case where like I did a phone screen for some company, and then it was with the recruiter had put me in touch with, and he called me back afterwards, and he's like, "How'd that go?" And I was like, I don't think I did very well. You know, they had to ask me a couple follow up questions that I just didn't know, and they were like, and then he was like, "Well, they loved you. They want to bring you in for an on site interview." I was like, oh, okay. But most of the time, I guess I feel pretty good about it. I think the thing I'm always most surprised at is the first callback, like where I'm like, yeah. Oh, I got my foot in the door. Like, because I feel like that's the hardest part, is like getting your foot in the door somewhere. But then from there on, it's not that I'm confident, but after they go, I've never had one go wrong. I can't think of a time where I got to like a face-to-face interview and didn't get the job. So that's gone well for me historically, but I'm sure that's not, it's because I haven't had a lot of jobs and haven't gone on a ton of job interviews, but
I think that's true for a lot of people.
Yeah. If you can get, like I said, getting the, like I certainly had plenty of jobs where I got like the form letter, like we don't have a position for you right now, or like you don't have the experience we're looking for, that kind of thing. But generally, yeah. I guess I generally feel pretty good about it. Like I felt pretty good when I left Thoughtbot. I was like, I feel like 75% confident I did okay there, but I'm not quite sure what Josh is going to think about my contribution on Factory Girl. But yeah, so I guess I don't have that negative self-doubt thing for me in interviews, which is good. I'm super nervous for them. Like, that's not to say I'm not nervous during them, but I generally, I think, have a pretty accurate perception of how they went when I leave.
I don't know. I felt like even my interview with Shopify, I felt like I bombed. And that one was basically just people, a series of people coming into a room and telling me features they wanted in ActiveRecord.
Like, oh, I did so terrible listening to those people ask me about what features they, or tell me what features they
have. I was like, did I come off as too like dismissive or like asshole-y? or was I too accepting of features that they were actually throwing at me to see if I was properly analyzing their features? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you get in your head, I mean, the Thoughtbot one helped. I really wanted the job, But what really helped is I immediately left for Las Vegas. I left from the ThoughtBot office, got on a plane, and went to Las Vegas with, like, three of my friends. So, like, I got to get that out of my head. And then, like, on the flight home, got an email from Chad that was like, hey, do you have some time to talk? So, like, I wasn't spending, I guess if I had probably spent all weekend worrying about whether or not I was going to get the job offer, I probably would have had time to talk myself into the fact that I did terribly. But I was,
yeah.
I was excitedly busy doing other things.
I'm pretty sure I did bomb the ThoughtBot one because I got put on hold for like 4 months.
That might have just been a timing thing. You never know.
It's because I wasn't experienced enough for, because I would have, if I had been hired when I applied, it would have been the second hire.
Ah.
And they wanted some more experienced consultants.
Okay.
But I don't know. I did have sometime last year, after one of my talks, I did have a person come up to me and was like, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but I turned you down for a job you applied for like 4 or 5 years ago. How's it going?
That's great.
Yep.
Another conversation people, like experienced developers, also have among themselves, which is related to the recruiters being annoying conversation, is the what would you do in an interview where you were asked to whiteboard the implementation of a linked list or something like that, or, you know, to program on the whiteboard, that kind of thing. And a lot of developers are like, I would just walk out because, you know, there's other jobs for me somewhere. And it's another one of those things that I feel like comes from a position of privilege where it's like,
right,
you are already in this industry and you have the experience and yes, you will find another job. But like, think back to like the first or second job you were applying for in the industry.
Right.
And you basically were like when I got the ThoughtBot job, several of my other interviews were like, I was actually asked to do FizzBuzz like on the board. And when I got asked, I laughed and he was like, oh, you've done this question before? I was like, no, actually I haven't. I just think it's funny. And so then
I mean, it's definitely a position of privilege. 100%. It's just like.
But at the same time, like I do, after you get to a certain point in your career, you do kind of want to make the point that like, look at my experience and where I've come from and like
right.
the past work I've done and the code samples I sent you and all this. And like, we're going to talk about linked lists. Like,
well, it's no different than our ability to laugh at recruiter spam.
Right. Exactly. Coming from a position of privilege, that kind of thing.
And really the correct answer to the linked list problem is first making sure that they specify whether they want a singly linked list or a doubly linked list.
Yeah, definitely.
Just saying.
I was involved in giving an interview at my last employer. We were interviewing for Rails jobs and we were doing pair interviews and the person I was paired up with asked the candidate how to sort an array. And he replied by calling sort, which I gave full marks to. But the person I was with did not appreciate. But I was like, that's a good answer. That's perfect. Like,
well, it's like I appreciate code schools that teach sorting algorithms because the purpose of teaching sorting algorithms isn't to make sure that they know sorting algorithms because nobody needs to know these sorting algorithms unless they're actually implementing a programming language or the standard library for programming language. Right. But it teaches algorithmic thinking.
Right.
And yes. So that's a useful skill. But even then, the result usually isn't like 2 weeks later, the result is not. And they remember that sorting algorithm other than maybe vaguely like the video of the hat dancers.
Right. And I remember like when I was in college, they taught all the different sorting algorithms and I couldn't tell you which one is the right one to use. Like it was useful to think of, like you said, it was useful to learn like algorithmic thinking and how if like you pivot the problem to look like this, then you see this solution more clearly than you saw the first solution.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
And there are some algorithms that's useful. Like, useful algorithms, you don't even need to know them, right? So I think binary search is a perfect one because that is one of those at some point in your career you will probably need to write your own binary search. But you don't need to, like, have memorized exactly how to write a binary search. You just need to know what it is
right.
and when it's useful and that it exists.
Can you recognize at some point you're going to start writing this and then when you start writing it, will you recognize, like, oh, I'm writing a binary search?
Right.
And the reason why that's important is because then you can Google for how to write a binary search, right?
Like, exactly.
Then you know, then basically the thing is knowing the right shared name so you can have a good discussion about these things.
Right.
And like, that's why it's important to know the names for patterns. It's not because like doing that makes you a fantastic developer. I mean, once you get to a certain level of experience, like you will look at the patterns and be like, oh yeah, I've done that before. I didn't know it was called that. But knowing it's called that is what allows you to have good conversations about them and like have good jumping off points and Google them and things like that.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's what's been on my mind. Interviewing, job hunting. If you're going to apply for the senior web developer position at ThoughtBot, and senior web developers is something we put on the... We call everybody here developers. I just said senior web developer because it's in like the UI for the position in the candidate tracking system we use because we thought it might discourage people who were not well qualified to apply. But it turns out I don't think it's helping. So if you're going to apply for the developer position here, I think... Now you have some insight into send me a good code sample and tell me what to look at. And now you know exactly how the process is going to work, kind of, sort of, at least as well as I know how the process is going to work. Anything else?
No, let's wrap up.
Okay. Show notes for this episode can be found at bikeshed.fm/84.
As always, ratings and reviews on iTunes or Google Play are much appreciated.
If you have feedback about this episode or any other episode, you can tweet us @_bikeshed, email us at host@bikeshed.fm, or leave a comment on the website.
Thanks for listening to the Bike Shed, and we'll see you next time.